This episode of the Disc Golf Podcast is brought to you by otbdiscs.com.
At one point in time, if you listened to the show, you knew about our little secret site to get awesome discs. It's not a secret anymore. It is a site where you can learn everything about the discs you're purchasing before you actually have them in your hands.
Get disc weight, dominess, flatness, all kinds of ratings. Learn it before you get it in there and get your favorite disc at only the best discs, otbdiscs.com. Use promo code DGPODCAST to get free shipping on your next order. What's up, disc golfers? Welcome to episode 240 of the Disc Golf Podcast. My name is Robin, and alongside me, my longtime friend, avid disc golfer, Joe.
Hey, friends. It's good to be back hanging out with y'all. You want to hear a fun story?
Sure. I was waiting. Normally, there's something coming. So
Yeah. Spoiler, it's not disc golf related.
Oh, geez.
So surprisingly, I think I might have said something slightly in Slack today for the first time, but I purposely have not told you this story because I want it to be fresh for you in on the podcast.
How fortunate for me.
Yesterday morning at like 5 o'clock in the morning, I start hearing a rooster.
That's what roosters tend to do at
crowing
5 a.m.
It's all day. Like, there's not really a time to be like, oh, as soon as the sun comes up, like, roosters, like, no, roosters just suck. They do it all day. Anyway.
No, they don't do it all night. They do it all day. So, yeah, they start when the sun comes up.
So, hear this rooster. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, loud enough that it wakes me up. I'm like, what the fuck, neighbors? Why do you have a rooster? Like, there's no areas around, like, there's no homes in my area that have any reason to have a rooster. I don't even know that there's a reason to have roosters. Anyway, I'm just like, well, shit. I guess I'll just get up and maybe have some coffee because I'm already up and figure it out. And my wife is like, why is it so loud? Like, is this rooster in our yard? I'm like, no way. No way this rooster's in our yard. So she proceeds to open our front door. And lo and behold, on our porch is a fucking rooster.
What did you name him?
I don't care. Jerk. jerk face.
But like, you're going to get hens now and just have a little chicken farm, right?
I already have a hen. Hey. My son's name is Henry. I call him Hen a ton. No. So I'm
you
just
could
like.
You get a hen and name,
and
her,
here's the
name
thing.
Her Henrietta.
Here's another piece to add into this. Last week, I kind of got, no, 2 weeks ago, I kind of got back on track from being like a KCD guy hardcore for like a week and a half or so. But then last week, I just went full KCD guy again. And so then yesterday was my morning that I was like, I'm ready. Like, I'm going to go to sleep on time. I didn't have any beers. I'm going to wake up and I'm going to go for a run. Like, I'm going to get back in the habit. I'm going to get back on track and run. And now there's a rooster on my porch, and I know, actually I even said it out loud. I was like, well, I probably shouldn't go running knowing my wife would be like, hell, and she exactly said, I was like, no, you can't leave us here with like this rooster, whatever.
What threat was the rooster going to be to you?
Dude, I don't know. I've heard about roosters. Like, roosters are like geese light. Roosters suck too.
Not they're nowhere near goose or swan.
Anyway.
Level
anyway,
in terms of danger birds.
So basically, it was like, I need to figure this out. So I get my broom and I like push it off my porch, and it gets all aggro and then just goes deeper into my yard because that was really smart of me.
Yeah,
thinking maybe it would just like pop over the fence and go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. So drinking coffee, figuring out like, go. Oh, you know, I'll open up like the back gate and like I'll. It'll just go out. It'll just go out the back gate.
You know, the taco shop, just like their afternoon buffet, that escaped. That's what happened.
Well, come get it. Anyway, so 5 to 6 a.m. nonstop, like crowing rooster. And I'm like feeling bad at this time, being like, it's waking up all the neighbors. Like, what the fuck? Like, this is not cool.
They're going to think this is my rooster.
Right, totally. Like, it's in my yard and think it's my rooster. So I finally get the gate. And I'm like trying to flank from one side, and it's already too far around my house the other way. So I have to like circle back, like legit just shaking a broom, just being like, get out of here. Like, finally gets out, close the gate. For another straight like 40 minutes, it's trying to figure out how to get back into my yard. Mm-hmm. But at that point, like, I'm off to work, whatever. And then probably like 3 or 4 hours later, I stop back home for not really lunch, just to stop by. My wife was working from home, was like, I still am hearing it. Like, it's in the neighborhood. And then like an hour later, get a text from my neighbor being like, hey, you still have that rooster? Like, we got to get it back to the ranch. And I'm like, one, you're an asshole.
You didn't say that, though.
No, not at all. No. And like, two, I'm like, how did this not wake you up? Like, to figure out, oh, my rooster's out. I need to figure it out.
No, because.
And then three, it's not my yard. I'm not going to hold a rooster being like, oh, it's probably one of my neighbors. I should keep it like safe and secure.
I mean, that's what I would have done. But yeah, you know.
You don't have a yard. You couldn't keep a rooster in your yard.
We literally have a rooster here.
But would you have like shoot it into the chicken cage?
Yeah, probably.
Well, yeah, because it's your actual rooster. It's not a random rooster coming into your home that doesn't have chickens or roosters.
So I'm going to give you some rooster knowledge real quick. Chicken knowledge.
Cock facts.
If you ever want to herd chickens, don't chase them. Their feet are on the ground and they're sensitive to vibrations.
Love them.
Rock like a you shall not pass. Like, take a staff or a broom and just pound it on the ground at your feet and move towards them to where you want to go. It works perfect. It's excellent. You don't have to like if you chase them, they'll scatter and they do other things. If you keep your distance and you just
The broom on the ground, it worked, and he went out of my yard.
And you take the bottom end of the broom and you just kind of like pound it on the ground in the general direction you don't want them to go. It will herd them to a place.
Well, I mean, I 100% when you said you shall not pass, I was like, oh, I got it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. No, it works fantastic. I mean, we have chickens here. I let them out into their like open yard where they can scratch and do things, but obviously can't have them out at night because we have bobcats and other things that would raccoons, other things that would just absolutely massacre
foxes.
Them at night. But that's the best way to get them in is you just move to the farthest corner and move them through in a contained space. So if you do that, if you have like a dog kennel or something like that, you can pretty easily trap a rooster.
I have no dog kennel.
Or like a box even. But you do need to find out where it's supposed to go because the roosters are jerks. You are right. They're nowhere near as dangerous to you as like a swan or a goose. Like, a swan or a goose can draw blood. The odds that a rooster hurts you is pretty low. They're also super puntable if you're like really freaked out.
I honestly had many thoughts where I was just like not only that, like I've had, you know, multiple thoughts just in my life of, and this is why I hate horses, of like, if this animal came at me, I could take said animal. Yeah. And I definitely had that world of like, I'll snap a rooster's neck if I got it.
Oh my God.
If I got to take care of it, I'll take care of it.
No, a rooster is below the threshold of needing to kill it. Like, its danger to you is so low that you needing to kill it is not
an
option.
I'm just so strong. Like, I was like, oh, I just a quick karate chop. I'm like, no. Oh no, I killed it. Oh,
you
dang.
Need to do that.
Because
it's literally zero
didn't
threat.
Happen. I shoot it out of my yard and was like, you're out of here. Like, sorry, I don't care. Like, someone cared about you, they're going to come figure it out. But with that said, my neighbor hit me up at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, like 10 hours later. I'm like, they like, I don't care
hey,
about you.
You got my chicken, bro?
Like, you should have heard that at 5 a.m. and been like, oh, dang, my rooster's over there. Oh, sorry, let me come get it. Like, instead, I had an alarm clock an hour before I was planning to get up. had to deal with that shit.
Oh, anyways, we got a great show for you guys tonight. We are going to do a mailbag show of sorts. We used our Slack group to send us a list of questions, and we're going to hit those rapid fire style because we got a lot of really good ones. Some of them I set aside because I think they need a longer explanation. So if I didn't get to your question, that was most likely the reason. It was definitely not because it was a shitty question. So we're going to do that. We're also going to preview the Des Moines Challenge. So we'll hit that, give our picks, and then we'll do our world-famous deer review, our disc and beer pairing, where we take a disc, we take a beer, we review them both, and let you know whether you should bring it on the course. Tonight, we have Numb and Number by Fall River Brewing Company, an 8.2% double hazy IPA. And we're pairing that with the Evader by Dynamic Discs, a 7-speed, 4-glide, 0-turn, 2.5 fade fairway driver. And yeah, you ready to hit some questions, Joe? Where you put your phone in my face?
I something I was trying to keep quiet, but whatever. People like sports. Did you know that a San Diego relief pitcher hit a grand slam like 25 minutes ago?
That's quite ridiculous. And I love it.
That's all. That is all. Let's do some questions.
All right. So our mailbag list, like I said, we're going to try and hit these quick, so we're not going to go deep into each one. We're just going to give Joe and I's kind deep. Of first take on the question, and just move on to the next one and try to get through as many of these as we possibly can before rocking our picks for Des Moines and doing our deer review. So this is from Reed Harry. If you throw a disc that's hard to come by, how many backups is enough? I'm talking like staple in your bag that may end up costing you hundreds of dollars to replace later. So I would assume that what the type of disc that we're talking about here would have to be like 2016 or 2015 Sexy Birds, or
I think 17 might be in that world too at this point.
Is it really? Is it that at that point?
It's getting close to
it. Got it. Or like second run FDs, or maybe like 5X Lunas, like
the 4 time zone.
That's true. Yeah, some of those things that are
but four
very
times zone,
expensive.
I feel like the Lunas and the Zones are more for clout than like awesome flight.
Yeah.
I think the other discs you've brought up are really flight based. I think you probably put like second run PD or PD2 also are in that same
too,
world.
Yeah. A lot of disc mania ones. So in any case, my answer
OG Glow FD.
Oh yeah, Glow FDs. My answer is 3. You need at least 3. And it's an important thing to, I think, layering in your bag, layering being the concept of using multiple of the same discs and throwing them, and over time having different versions of wear of that same disc is really important. So just in that general sense, I don't think it even has to be rare. I think if you love a disc, you get 3 to 5 of them. And you work them into various stages of wear, and you'll find a way to replace molds in your bag just because you'll get a understable version of your favorite disc. So I think I think it's not just about a rare disc, a hard to come by disc. I think that this is a concept that you need to make a part of your general bag construction. So And it doesn't mean that new versions of that disc won't be good. You can still throw it a new run or a new plastic and see if it works. And if it flies the same, fantastic. Problem solved for you. But if not, you'll be able to layer and stack the mold you really love in the plastic that was out in that year. So
yeah, I'd say 3/ as many as you can afford at that time.
3 to 50.
Yep.
3 to 50. Is that good enough? I think so. All right. Next question came from Alex Newport. Under what circumstances do you disc up when you could get there with a slower speed disc? Joe, I'll let you take the floor first.
Oh, God.
disc all the time?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the time, a lot of, like, if I have an open, and this is dumb, obviously we've seen it through like videos Simon's put out. Like, that's what Simon does. Simon goes, oh, there's a clean hyzer line. I can just disc up and know I can drop it right here instead of having to touch a, or throw a touch shot.
But then we saw those videos with him and Paul McBeth. That's what I just said. Saying,
totally. Exactly.
Turn over your P2 and boom, under the basket.
100%. I think personal preference, like what you feel good, like I just feel better at times doing that. But I think for me, the biggest time ever is when wind is a factor.
Uh-huh.
When I know spike hyzering my Thunderbird is not going to turn over. Whereas if I smash an escape, if there's just a little bit of headwind, it could go real bad.
Yeah.
So I guess that's my big times.
My circumstances
is never.
No, there's quite a few, actually. When you should disc up, number one would be low ceiling. Slower discs need a higher ceiling. They tend to be deeper. They tend to need more float. They tend to sky up. So if you have a low ceiling and you need to make a shot that's short, you should pick a faster disc that's more overstable and try and gun it in, you know, below that ceiling. If you're trying to float a putter underneath a 6 foot, underneath a 6 foot tree level, it's probably not going to work out well for you. The next one would be if you need a skip. If you need a skip shot, it's pretty unlikely that you're going to get lower speed discs to get a big skip. Whereas jumping to a faster overstable disc gives you a much higher likelihood of getting that skip shot that you need. The other times would be headwinds. You don't necessarily have to go to the highest speed, but something that's a little bit faster to cut the wind, and also, you know, headwind makes the disc behave like it's going faster to begin with. So going with that faster disc is going to mitigate that to some degree. So I think that's another great time where you should disc up. The last one would be a flex shot. Like when you really need to get a big S curve out of something and the lower speed overstable discs just aren't going to be able to do it. I think that's probably the last one. I'm sure there's totally a couple other scenarios.
Definitely more, but
obviously rollers and things like that where you could probably throw a putter in the shot, but you've got a low ceiling and you're doing a roller instead or something along those lines. But I think those are the main ones in my mind strategically where you should disc up.
No, that's good.
All right. Joshua Kendall says, is forward fade a myth? I'm going to start here. I think backward fade is a myth. Because I've never seen a disc fade backward unless it's a crazy headwind.
Yeah, I don't think backward fade is really a thing. I think for me, when I feel like I coined the forward fade piece. It's not that discs don't fade forward. There are just a lot of discs that fade close to like parallel, not necessarily parallel, but they'll just fight harder to the left. And when I talk forward fade, I just say as it's fading, it's continuing like a bigger push forward than maybe other discs may do.
Yeah. I think a lot of this has
to... I think that's glide.
I think to answer, joking answer to that, because there is a real question in this that I'm not just discounting. There are a lot of different types of shots that result in different types of fades. So you can take an understable disc and you can throw it nose up high up in the air and you can let it stall and fade hard to the left-hand side, even though for a right-handed player, of course, even though it's an understable disc, because you threw it nose up and because you put it high in the air, it will fade really hard to one side or the other and crash in, you know, seemingly stopping. We call it a stall shot. So if you took that same disc and you threw it nose down and straight, you might not get any fade at all. So there's a lot of different ways to shape a shot, and when you get into a really good groove with a driver that you love, you can get it to have that slow fade at the very end where you're still picking up a ton of distance and you still get a skip at the very end, and it's just because you got a really nice flat release with no oat and it hit the ground at the right time. We talk all the time about matching slope, matching angles, angle control, and what that is. And being able to do that is what we consider, you know, forward fade. It's getting your angle control right on your shot for the slope that you're trying to hit and the wind conditions you're trying to deal with. So when we say forward fade, it's just a mix of reading the wind right, getting your angle control correctly, and realizing what slopes you're dealing with at your green or your landing spot.
Yeah. I think a part of it too is just trying to explain like the glide some discs have. Like there's just some discs that we've thrown that I'm just like, how did it go that far? Like I thought it was finishing and it just kept pushing. What the heck? Like when I think it started with the second run FD talking about the fade forward. FDs in general, I think a river is another disc that I'm like, how did that keep going? Like, I thought it was done and it just kept pushing. And I think it's more a part of fade, and the forward fade is just like the best way to perceive it from the, our vision from the other side of the field. True. And I think that's really the big reason.
It's, you could probably say it's just glide.
Yeah.
But when you're watching it, it looks like fade.
It's just pushing from where you're forward standing as it's hooking up.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I will say just before we move on, yes, Frisbee guys, MTA is a thing where you throw the disc way up in the air and it comes back to you or backwards. Yes, there's a backwards fade. That's not what we're talking about. I just don't need, we don't need that. I don't need the comments.
Stall.
Yeah, I don't need the comments of like, but if you throw nose up into a headwind,
I already said nose up into a thing. That,
right, but
that.
You were like, is there a backward fade? And someone's going to be like, of course there is.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't doubt that. But all right, next question from Scott Tucker. We need more courses. Golf courses are there and available, but are they good for the sport? This is one I almost eliminated because the answer is so diverse.
I thought you eliminated it.
I'm going to leave it in. I'm leaving it in for the sole reason that, you can give a quick response to this, which is that do I have a disc golf course next to me? If the answer is no, and there's a golf course that's willing to put one in, yes, I want that.
If our local nine hole that has been extinct for 20 years came back, Los Arroyos, as a nine hole disc golf course.
They'd have to plant a lot of trees.
Well, it's all dead. It's whatever. Yeah. But with that said, had it shifted from a golf course to a disc golf course, 100% I would play it every day.
I'll put it this way.
But I wouldn't love
it. Take any disc golf course I can get at this point, and I think there are questions coming up that are addressing the influx of players to the sport and those effects on the sport. And at this point, we're having a ton of new players coming in, doing things all the time, you know, learning the sport, ending up on courses. And if we can spread them out a little bit and we got a golf course in there, sure, I'll take it. That's fine. That's my opinion right now. Is it good for the tournament into the sport? I have a totally different opinion on that, but that wasn't in the question. So
right. No, totally. Would you like disc golf or no disc golf? I shall take disc golf.
I shall take more courses.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from Dominic Carroza, which will sell better, Disc Mania Cloudbreakers or James Conrad World Champ Envies? I have a depressing answer for this. You go first.
I do. I mean, Cloudbreakers.
I want to believe that the disc golf world will buy more Envies. I do believe that the disc golf world wants to buy more Envies.
Yeah.
But I also think that more Cloudbreakers will be made given the recent news we've had about Discmania and their expanded factory, and so I think more Cloudbreakers will be made than Envies, and I think that therefore more Cloudbreakers will sell than Envies.
I'm going to go a little bit more depressing.
Oh no.
People are dumb like me
and want high speed
and
driving.
Go, Well, this one goes 600 feet.
Yeah.
And this one goes 325. Of course I'm going to get the one that goes 600 feet.
There is also no time frame on this thing. So and it's also assuming that we are getting James Conrad World Champ Envies. I
don't know.
Do we know that?
Are we getting Volts? Are we getting Nomads? We don't know.
Yeah.
Although, like, yo, MVP.
If you don't do.
You got to, like, you are behind. And I know manufacturing is so behind and stuff, but, like, you got to have you got to have some weight in the wings.
James
to, like,
Conrad Envies should have been out the day after he signed with MVP.
Yeah.
It is just an absolute, I just don't understand. And then you have this shot happen. It's like, oh, yeah, the Envy is one of the best putters in the game. Like,
talk shit about Innova, talk shit about all the other disc golf manufacturers. Not that there's a lot to, but if this was Paul's number six, guarantee within 3 days.
Oh.
Six times out.
So
guarantee.
Have you ever been to like a flea market in Mexico?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Where you see like the, like I remember being down in one and seeing like 49ers, like three-peat shirts and stuff like that. And just being like, oh man. Oh no.
Yeah. No.
And just
or
stuff like that.
Or like Bengals.
So best
Super Bowl champion.
Best believe Discraft has sent some boxes of six time zones and buzzes to some country somewhere.
Wow, that's not that bad. They had the zones set aside and the stamps ready to go. A little bit different, but they had the disc. They guarantee they had a big old cache of discs and the stamp already made up.
Oh, for sure.
To just hot print and get out.
And in reality, like, was it that hard to add a sixth claw to the, they have to redesign it for six, right? Because there
they do, because there's already no, like that whole like,
six claws is like what animal is that?
Here's the thing.
I mean, it's a beast. I guess it could be a mythical beast with six claws.
I feel like we will know.
I feel like
we'll know at some point.
What if they do like two claw scratches, like four on one side and two on the other, like two paws? Like
Or they could just go like Wolverine and go 3-3.
Oh yeah.
That'd be way tighter. Yeah, that'd be way fucking sicker. Yeah.
Snicky, snicky, snack.
Yep. All right. So that's what it'll be.
Okay.
Possibly next year.
Yeah.
But anyway. Bad on you, MVP. I know it's tough, but for sure you should have had 10,000 discs set aside and stamp ready to go. Well, I guess, I mean, that's not
we
the
don't
same.
Even
it's not the same.
Random
it's not
quantities.
The it's not the same. It's but, not I like no one
how
was
could they,
putting
how
tons
could,
of money on James Conrad. I am so we, pumped that he won. Everyone is, but you could not have
predicted.
Drawn that up.
No.
You
of course
couldn't
not.
Have, honestly couldn't have drawn him up to be lead card final round.
But you could have drawn up that the Envy is one of your most popular discs and that the James Conrad is the best player on your team and that you should probably have a James Conrad signature Envy already somewhere that people could then...
Yeah, I still am like very much like... So they just had lots of Volts sitting around. Like I still am like, how was the Volt? The...
Yeah, I mean, he liked Volts. So I'm sure he was part of that conversation. And you know, the Nomad is now coming out. So like,
right. So that might be the.
So he probably wanted to brand his own, just like Paul Macbeth with the Luna and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's creating your own path and generating income on your own signature
disc. It's coming.
It all makes sense.
It's coming, but I feel like at this point they should already have like shared the stamp or done something to be like, it's coming.
All right, related question from Dotsevek. Who is the most likable champ in the world and why is it James Conrad?
You mean Greg Barsby?
I was just about to say the same thing. I think Greg Barsby
or Nate Doss. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I
oh,
love.
Oh, dude, you're gonna
James
get some hate
Conrad.
For Nate Doss. There's so much Doss hate.
I don't care.
On
just
the commentary,
because the way he talks, whatever.
Yeah,
Doss.
I
is
think
the man.
I think Greg Barsby is a great example. I think Juliana Korver on the ladies' side is a fantastic presence,
or
and
Val.
So is Val. I think it's hard to beat the best shot in the history of disc golf and also him just being a super chill dude. So it's probably James Conrad.
I will also
but
say something.
We had
that
to
might,
give some devil's advocate.
That might knock me down and make people dislike me more than my comment already made. I don't feel like, in my knowledge, and granted, I don't go back super deep, but let's say the last 10 years, I don't know that there's an unlikable world champ. I mean, I know people don't like Paul, but I'm not there on that.
Do people actually dislike Paul?
I think so.
I don't think so. I think that people might.
But also, like, let's go early season. Like, how can you not love yourself some Ricky Wysocki at this point in the world?
I think that what just happened in Worlds generated way more excitement for disc golf than we ever could imagine. Like, right now, if we were talking about six-time Paul McBeth and six-time Paige Pierce, we would have moved on already. We wouldn't care about Worlds anymore. It would have been a fait accompli. Like, this, we knew this was going to happen. It happened, and all right, let's move on to these next tournaments, and we wouldn't be chatting about it. So, yeah, it makes a big difference. But I don't think that means we hate those players. It just means we as a culture love the underdog, and we love the story of the unimaginable shot to win it all.
Yeah.
And the, you know, even though Paige's was an unimaginable melt, it still is a story that was, we didn't expect it. We expected Paige to lay up and make it and minimum force a playoff and, you know, end up winning in that playoff. But the fact that Katrina was able to park that shot and Paige just inexplicably
pooped,
just let that shot go errantly, you know, causing her to lose. But at the same time, the sport generated all this momentum, mostly due to Conrad's shot.
Conrad's momentum is amazing, but at that same time, like, Conrad's got all the tools. Well, not the forehand. He's got lots of tools. Big thrower. Awesome putter, great stand-up, low-key guy. But then you got Barsby and his cocaine mirror glasses and been grinding forever.
Yeah.
He does not have a huge backhand. He does not have a huge forehand.
But
he has a very high end on both sides. When his putt is on, he wins world championships.
Yeah.
He smokes cigs and drinks some beer here and there and does a great climo impression. Like,
I think you could argue that Barsby might be the most fun to hang out with all time.
Do you want a quesadilla guy?
I think,
or a low-key quesadilla guy?
Yeah. I think Barry.
Either way, you win.
I think Barry Schultz needs to be mentioned, too, just because. Like, he was there through all of it, so. Yeah. All right. Same people. I'm gonna do a combo question here from both Doth and Scott Tucker, which was the first part from Doth was, would the average disc golfer shave strokes off their game if they threw only 9-speed or lower discs? And then Scott follows up with, is laying up a skill that should be talked about and actually practiced? Answer number one. I primarily drive with Thunderbirds, which are 9-speed. I really only use my higher speed discs for understable shots where I've got an open route or I'm going uphill or in a tailwind, and I flourish when I stay below 9-speed. I stay accurate, and it's fantastic for me. I think it's something that more people should do, even 7-speed. I think you drop this number to 7 and have it still make sense. And then when Scott says, is laying up a skill that should be talked about and actually practice, putter rounds. Play putter rounds. You will end up short of baskets, and you will force yourself to practice approaching to the basket, and you will make your game better. It's not about parking it. It's about learning how to throw your putters and accurately get to those spots so that you can save strokes in tournament rounds, putter rounds. Do it.
I feel like Scott was trying to shit on me there.
I think he was.
Because I for sure lost a few strokes last night on just real bad layups. Like, real bad, like, I'm like, 100 feet out, like bad stance, like maybe some obstacles, but really I should be able to put it on the pin. And oh, I let it out low and now I'm still 60 out.
Oh,
and
we've all been there.
And shit. So for sure that 100%, like laying up one, just, we talk about all the time, like take your medicine. Take your medicine. Don't run that. I played with an amazing disc golfer. You know, his name's Kevin Couch. I played with him last night. He's fantastic, but he ran like everything and crazy wind and just kept putting himself at like deep, deep putts. Granted, he was able to save a good amount of them, but each time he did it, he was like, nope, I'm going to make this. I'm going to make this, which is great to have that confidence. But having a round like that, had he a third of the way through the round been like, you know what, my putt isn't right where I want it to, I'm just going to put it at the base of the basket, which he had all the skill in the world to do, he would have shaved four strokes off his game. As far as the nine speed stuff, I very, very much want that to be true, or the seven speed, 100%. The thing you have to realize, though, too, the same way I talked about disking up for whatever, like it's a confidence thing. Like I've played with people and I know in our Slack group, and I'm sure people have played with him and who knows, maybe he's listening right now. There's a dude who throws like 300 foot flex forehand Nuke OSs and shreds courses. Like he does very well. If you know your discs, please don't be this person.
Well, I think the question presumes that this is the average player, okay, and that they cannot throw a Nuke OS properly. So,
well, this guy doesn't throw Nuke OS properly.
I get that, but like,
but I'm just saying, I've been beaten by people who throw like,
yeah, but
14
you,
speed
that was
discs
on a bad day
on gross hyzers and park 280 foot holes, and I'm like, dang it.
But that was a bad day for you. On your best day,
I know,
or
I'm
even
saying,
an average day, that doesn't happen.
That's true. You know what? And I take it all back. Because their best day will never be close to the best day that someone who's being smart with their disc can have.
I agree. Yes.
Okay. I take it all back. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Makes me feel better about myself. Yes. Yes.
Another question from our prolific Doth. 1 12-ounce beer every three holes or kill the six pack in the front nine? Pros, cons. This isn't even the right question.
Well, mainly
question.
We drink 16s.
Exactly.
Like,
this is the true approach is a 16-ounce pint can on the front nine. You close it out on the ninth hole. You start a fresh one on the 10th, and that is the best way to have a good round, enjoy good beer, and still like not end up, you know, housing.
But you gotta have a brewmate or a can keeper, because if you're sipping on a 16 for nine holes, that's gonna be rough at the end.
Most of the time it's fine. You're okay. Come on, a brewmate's an excellent choice though.
I've never
not
two
a sponsor
16s
of the show.
On a course.
What? Well, yeah, I'm saying that would be the
ideal.
The ideal thing to do.
I know you're saying that, and I'm here being like, who are you talking to right now?
I'm not saying that's what happens every time, because
ideally for,
you know,
me,
alcohol consumption tends to beget more alcohol.
I like to drink a little bit and get a little jitters at the beginning. And then, if you want to go to your first 16-ounce, like maybe you hit that around hole four or five, and then you rock that maybe through hole 11, 12, and then bring that last one home, and then get to the car and have another one. Like, that's, for me, like, that's the ideal. But I think for me, to have a good round and survive, it's like you have that one up front, and then like
you 64 ounces of water,
and then you crack the second one like hole nine, like you just rock that out, and then hole nine you crack that second one, and then you try and nurse that as long as possible, and then you go to water until like 14,
yeah,
and then bring it home.
Since it
what
says-
you don't want to do is knock down like a 22 before you start the round, or by hole two. and then, you know, maybe 3 to 4 to 5 more 16s the rest of the round.
So since it says pros, cons at the end of this question, I need to address the cons, which is that in reality, if you want to have a good disc golf round, you should not drink at all.
Truth.
You should drink just water.
Truth.
Because if you drink any amount of alcohol, you will increase the amount of times you need to piss. And that's just going to mess up your round. Because
and that's why you drink high you're alcohol. Screwing up don't do what I say.
You're screwing up your kidney function. It's going to force you to pee out all the water that you're consuming instead of it getting to your body. It's not good. If you want to have a good round, drink water and you'll be fine. If you want to have a good time and you're not worried about having
and you don't have to drive
the best round ever and you don't have to operate a motor vehicle, I you know, you do what you want. You do you.
Maybe you have like 3 to 5 16-ounce beers.
Yeah.
Maybe you also have 2 to 4 buzz balls. Who knows?
Sure.
Why not? Have fun. It's not a competitive round. Like, get after it.
Have some quesadillas.
A lot of times it's way more fun, especially
maybe
when you just embrace
cone.
Like,
who knows?
Like, I'm kind of hammered. I'm just having fun. Like, that's fine. Like, if you have beers and then you start getting pissed off that you're not playing well, probably shouldn't drink.
Probably
like,
not.
In general, yep. Especially not on the course.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. All right. So next one from Latier Lewis. Should I play for par for a better score or go for the throw in for the fame? Are you James Conrad? And are you down a stroke to Paul Macbeth? Otherwise, play for par.
You can live in the world of the half go.
Yeah. I mean, the answer to this in this last World Championships, had Paige Pierce and Paul Macbeth both gone for it, I think they're both champions. I think both Paige and Paul could have landed those shots in the circle and won.
A billion percent Paul could
have
put
on that
pin.
So if this is in the context,
but he saw that layup and was like, well, I guess I'll layup.
Yeah, and Paul even said it. There's quotes from Paul where like he was like, I wish Conrad's shot off the tee would have been good because I would have gone for it and I would have won. Nate Sexton said it on his podcast. So you can check that out if you want.
It's called Jogging It.
It's called the Sexton podcast, right?
Yeah.
But he quoted him there, like saying that Paul Macbeth told him, had Conrad had a good tee shot, I would have gone for it, and I would have been there. And so there, it's a question.
No, you play for par. Play for par, but play the odds, right? Yeah. So there are holes that we play that a throw-in has a backstop. Like, I can throw from 150 out, and there's a pretty darn good backstop. So if I miss it, I'm still not outside circle. If it's like a downhill, if it's a death throw in, if it's skip possibility, like, yeah, just maybe lay it up and get that par. Yeah. I think just play your odds. Be smart about throwing in. It's not bad to want to throw in. It's not. I'm not against it. Just you got to play the odds.
I think for average amateur players, playing for par more often than not is going to yield you a better round.
Totally.
You are not going to make that downhill circle 2 putt very often. Maybe 3% of the time. I don't know, 2% of the time. So if you calculate that in along with the fact that you might go 30 feet long or 25 feet long and that you're only...
Or water or whatever.
And that you're only 40% or 50% from that edge of circle putt, you should lay up close. Because the odds that you make that putt are very slim, and the odds that you put yourself so far away that you end up with a, you know, birdogey situation are very high. So think of it that way. If you're trying to make a hero putt that you know you haven't made one of these this year, like I'm standing on this putt with this downhill on the bottom side and I'm edge of circle and I can make this in my backyard probably, but here I am in the round, just lay it up, take your three,
yep
and move on. So all right, next one from Ted. This question is specifically for you.
Is it about the 49ers or
no? Would you rather take 3 shots of warm 151 in a row after work every day for a week, or shave your beard constantly?
That's such a dumb question.
I agree.
That's like the easiest fucking answer.
I could have told Ted the answer to this.
Ted, bro.
The answer was 151.
Line them up.
Line them up.
Line them up. Line them up. Ooh, my mouth hurts and my tummy hurts for 15 minutes and I feel like a rock star, like a god every night. And I have a Thor beard. Let's go. So easy.
Wow. From Jeff Wu, we have how do you maximize skip? I'll start here. Skip, like we mentioned in a previous question, is about angle control.
Yep.
So angle control first and then disc selection. So you have to make sure that you're aware of where you want that disc to skip and what the angle of the ground is where you're planning to land it. And then secondarily, choose a disc that is overstable and most likely higher speed. I would say if you're trying to skip something, it better be 7 speed or higher. Anything less than that is probably not going to be a great skip candidate, though possible if the ground is really hard or, you know, things like that. Certainly if you're talking about hard pan in a place like De La Viega or, you know, anything like that, anything can skip or sidle or
yeah,
or scurry along the ground. But if you're really talking about true skip situations, you want to have an overstable, higher speed disc, minimum 7 speed. I'd say probably closer to 9, depending on how far you're trying to go. And then it's really about making sure that disc hits the ground at the right angle. So you got to get, whether it's a little bit of Anhyzer on an overstable disc to make sure that it comes in right, or if it's something that's sloping down from like right to left, you could just go with a Purehyzer and let it skip down in. It's really mostly about angle control.
Yeah, it is. So if you want like a forward, nice, big panning, you want it to be coming in like at a slight hyzer. If you want a flare, especially if you're talking like short distance, like 50 feet out and you're trying to get it down around a tree and have a big cut left, like you want it to hit on a hard hyzer. But you also, the big thing too, if you were talking skip, you need to know the surface you're hitting too. And that's sometimes the toughest stuff. Like expecting a big skip because it's a Firebird or a Flare and you hit a patch of like tall grass and it's dead, or you hit a rock, you know, you got to see what it is. If you talk about De La, it's like you have to push past that root because that root will throw it all off.
Mm-hmm.
But usually that higher speed disc hitting at a harder hyzer will be a more drastic, like right hand, backhand, right to left, just big push left. But yeah, going downhill, matching the slope, just like Robin said, like you can hit a nice surface and have a nice, like clean glide over. Yeah, man, it's so much angle. Cause you can also, there are places that you can play the anti-skip because of just how the ground hits and it might be coming yeah. in. It might be coming in at a hyzer, but because there's a bank up, it'll actually come in more flatter anhyzer and get an anti-skip.
Yeah. And the other kind of, it's an important factor, but still subtle, is wind. You know, if you have a headwind, like say you're playing up to a knoll where you've kind of at your tee pad is protected from the wind, but there's wind coming over a little knoll where the basket is. If you're trying to skip up to that basket, suddenly that disc skips up with its nose up in the air and there's a headwind, it's not going to go forward anymore.
Yep.
In fact, it might be even worse. It might go backward at that point. So there's little conditions you'll have to play, but in general, it's about understanding the angle that your disc needs to hit the ground, you know, where you plan to land it, and then making sure you're choosing something that's high speed and putting some good spin on it, and that it's overstable.
Yep.
It doesn't necessarily have to be overstable. Sometimes you got to do it with an understable disc, but that has to do with the angle, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's about making sure that disc hits the ground flat. You're not going to get a skip if it's spiking in. The disc has to hit the ground flat. That's how you get a skip. So
unless you're flare skipping short distance around something.
Or hard ground. If it's hard ground, you'll get a skip almost no matter what.
So I'll tell you, and if you want to learn about other things in my bag, you can go to patreon.com/thediscgolfpodcast and watch my In the Bag coming up later tomorrow. But one disc I carry, the flare, Streamline Flare, I love my skip shots. Short distance, having to get like around a tree and get left real quick, throwing a hard hyzer at the ground, basically right where I want it to skip, and it just popping right over.
Yeah.
Love that shot.
So from Tyler Ragsdale, a couple of questions. I'm read two of them from him.
Oh, rest in peace.
Is disc golf too easy for the top pros?
I mean, Paul just lost.
I think sometimes it is, yes.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, depending on the course. But at the same time, you're right. Like, if it was too easy for the top pros, then the top-rated pro would win every time. You would think, right? Maybe? I don't know. That's a tough question. I think generally kind of probably yes, because we have a good performance in most rounds is double digits under par. And I think you could make an argument that the courses we love the most, you know, 6 to 8 down is a good round.
When LeBron James scores 55 points, does that mean basketball is too easy?
Well, I mean, it means he's a cheater, but...
that TRT. I think there are people that transcend games.
Yeah.
There are athletes who transcend stuff, and they're still going to have bad days. It's going to be rough. They've got to be at their top to do what they need to do. I don't know that it's too easy. I think there are always shots like we just saw. I don't think it's too easy. If it gets to a point that they don't try anymore, they don't want to play, and there's the competitive piece goes away, then I'll say maybe it's too easy, but I don't see that happening.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough question. I think that if we asked the top pros, they would probably say that certain courses are certainly too easy for them.
Yeah, and there's been weird stuff. I mean, if you look at Waco 3 years ago, Paul's 18 down, 4 years ago, 3 years ago.
3 years ago, I think.
The next year they were like, yeah, we're gonna change a lot
this
of these
course
pars
because this is like, or this tee,
yeah, because this is dumb. But then if you look at like that same year, the year previous, the first SF Open, that was the opposite, where it was just like, I know you're calling this a par three, but maybe one out of the entire field for the entire week is going to get a three.
Yeah, remember we watched Jerm can like a 90-footer or something like that to be like one of two
birdies. Birdies, we're not talking eagles. We're talking birdies.
Yeah, like, and that was like, what, 16?
Probably? Yeah, 15 or 16.
15 or 16.
Or 14. There's a lot of weird ones going up around.
Yeah, they
actually, it was probably like 9 or something, because it goes back and...
Oh, does it? Okay, you might be right.
Because it
goes
up, and then it comes back down, and then back up. So never mind, it was probably like 7. Anyway.
Let's move on to the next one. We weren't going to get in-depth on in each of these, but another one from Tyler. Who is the best marketing manager in disc golf? I know my answer right off the top of my head. And it's Ian Anderson of Central Coast Disc Golf, because he's lasted through every single fad in all of disc golf. He's been there from the beginning. You can find him in our Slack group. You can find him on Reddit. He answers people's questions. He's forthcoming. When Jomez Productions drops out of covering the Des Moines Challenge, he gets out there.
Why does Jomez hate Iowa?
Contacts people, puts a crew together, and gets post-produced going.
Don't worry, boys. He's flying us out.
It's Ian Anderson. My second place is the evil genius, UC Marissa.
That's where I was going to go, but I cannot argue with Ian. So we can just move right past. So, I think that's
all right,
fine.
We'll get right through there. And then Jeff Wu, another one from him. What is our favorite plastic? What is your favorite plastic, Joe?
Oh,
I know mine, and it's kind of I feel kind of bad saying it, but
I think so. I'm gonna say what it used to be, and I'm gonna say what I think it probably is now, and it's kind of dumb because I think I only have one. I only have one disc.
Oh God, we're gonna say the same thing.
originally was Lucid, to be totally honest. Lucid, I love Lucid plastic, but right now, just for like its properties and all its everything, I don't think I'm gonna say same thing, or we'll have a similar answer. Eclipse plastic.
Okay.
The like plastic that. My Pilot is perfect. It's a little flexy. It's got ungodly glow. I love that Pilot plastic.
My favorite is 750 by Prodigy.
That's a good one.
I think that's one of the
that's a close
one
second.
Of the best premium plastics on the market, and we've always
true actually.
Even when we've trashed things about Prodigy, we've always said money. That their plastic is money, and even their base 300 plastic is probably better than most companies' base plastics.
D-Line and DX are trash
comparatively. Yeah. Yes. So I really, really like the feel of that.
Sorry. So is Pro D. Sorry. I don't mean to shit on.
But, only you know, this is like the worst question in the whole thing because everyone's going to have their like feel and it's fine. It's okay. Like, I like the way it feels. You like the way something else feels. We can all feel stuff.
What? Yeah. Totally. No, that was great, actually. Like, you're right. Yeah. Prodigy Plastic has always been like top tier. Better than that Eclipse plastic, I'm telling
you. We got two more questions in here.
I thought you were going to go your bullet.
Eternal plastic?
Yeah.
I would, but I haven't been sent a second Eternal bullet, so I'm waiting for that.
A touche.
And then I could change my answer if that second Eternal bullet might show up. Perhaps in a heavier weight that might be more overstable.
Or you just throw a Pilot.
Or, you know, I just saying. I'm not.
You could also throw Pilots.
But, all right, another question. Ted, again, if you could pick the next world champ, who would it be? Let's narrow it down to the top 50 players. Now, I should frame this. This is intended to be if we could pick them, not who do we think. Who do you want to be the next world champ? MPO, FPO.
I'm going to get shit on.
Oh, yeah?
I want number six for Paul.
Really?
I do.
So your answer is both who you want and what you think is going to happen.
Yeah.
Because I think we both think that Paul is going to have a rage tour going.
I want it. Like, there's something. Maybe it's the Mexican piece, which I didn't even know until recently. Like, I don't know what it is. But you just gotta like, he's that good. Like, I can't help but just be like, I want.
I don't disagree. And while I think that it will be Paul McBeth, my answer is Kevin Jones because he's come so close and he's had those shitty blow ups, those bad breaks that have lost him some tournaments this year. And some bad decisions too, not just bad play, but he is capable of being a like 10-50 plus player in my opinion. And I think that he's kind of learning as these bad breaks happen, and I think he could put it together, and that's who I would want. I think that's who deserves it in terms of how much effort he's putting into the game. Maybe he needs to like eat a little bit less quesadillas, but I can't speak to that personally. But that's who I want it to be. And on FPO, I want to see a European player take it. I want to see an Evelina or a Tatar, you know, something along those lines. I want to see that.
Right. So So we say who we think will and who we want to. Who I think will, FPO, I think it's going to be Evelina.
Okay.
Like, I feel like Evelina is going to be the next world champ.
Europe is so into disc golf, and we need to start having Europe be a bigger part of our tour. Like, there needs to be more tournaments in Europe that are a big part of the Disc Golf Pro Tour or whatever it is. It has to be part of it. there's so many players out there. There's so many people interested, and there we will reap the rewards of seeing an expanded European circuit. And I think UC, like we said on the marketing manager thing, I think UC knows this and he's going to push for it. And that's what I want to see.
And who I want. I don't know. I feel bad. Like, I want Kona to like figure it all out.
Yeah.
Like, she's been grinding for a long time too. And I feel like she does a lot. She's got a YouTube stuff. Like, she pushes hard to keep growing things. I feel like she's super positive. She has all the tools, but the same thing we talk about, like, rarely aside from like the kickoff to the season. Oh, and Waco. Rarely is she able to hit all three facets.
Yeah. Especially putting.
In a tournament. Yeah. Especially putting.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Get rid of that weird Anheuser thing.
I know. It was so cool when it was.
When she won.
When it worked at Waco. And,
yeah.
And then.
And then it didn't. And then it didn't.
But, yeah. All right. Final question. TJ Lewisdale.
TJ, smoke show.
How difficult is committing to produce a podcast almost every week? I love that you put almost in there because we pretty much are almost. I would like to take this answer and take the time to thank our listeners, because we had,
and our wives,
nothing going for this week, and I messaged our Slack group about 7 hours before we were going to record and just said, hey, give us some disc golf questions that we can answer. And we got this just absolute glut of questions. And I probably got in 60% of them, I'd say, in this podcast. But, Joe and I don't have, we aren't as dedicated to this podcast as a lot of the other disc golf media companies, and we could probably work harder at that. But in reality, you know, I got kids and I got a full-time job and 20 employees, and Joe's got a child and has probably exactly that amount under him too, right? Probably.
Yeah, no, I got like 35
that work on a regular basis in an organization. So we do this podcast because we like hanging out with each other and we like talking about disc golf. So yes, there are times when it's hard for us to fit it into our schedule and we don't have exactly what we need to talk about and we aren't fully informed on whatever it is that we're talking about. But we do like doing it, and that's the real main reason why it happens. So there are definitely plenty of weeks where we're not ready, and that's why we skip those weeks.
We don't ever want to put out something that's just absolute trash.
So if we're just not prepared and we're not in the right mindset, we skip the week, and that's why that happens. And it just is. We're best friends. We love talking about disc golf, and we just like to hang out and do it. So,
and I'll say we're over 5 years now doing this. Just like Ron said, we have all the stuff going on, but I'll also say that from the time we started to now, there's been a huge increase. Like, Robin has 8 more kids than he did when we started.
And that's not true. There's 2 more.
Is there 2? 2.5. No.
I had 1 kid when we started.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 2.5. Sorry. I'm like already counting number 4.
Yeah.
I already had a kid, but he was super young. It was easy to get away. Robin's business was still building. I was in a totally different role in my organization when we started. Like, totally different. I'm in a totally different place now. I've got way more things to do. Robin has way more things to do because his business is booming too. Life gets harder. We've had fires. We've had pandemic. We've had smoke. We've had all sorts of crazy shit happen through this time. But we're still here. We're still doing it. And just like Robin said, it's we don't want to give you something that's not worthy of your time. We don't want you to just like, I don't ever want you to get 15 minutes into one of our pods and be like, I'm out, even though sometimes I have rants that go 15 minutes in that don't talk about disc golf at all. But I assume at this point, hopefully, you know,
we talked about
me.
Roosters until 9 minutes and 40 seconds in this podcast.
But I'll say some of the constants that have happened. We still love disc golf. We still love playing disc golf together. I think our friendship has nothing but gotten tighter and closer through the last 5 years. Through COVID, this was like our excuse to hang out. So it helped us get out and do it more. As long as we can throw up 7 hours prior and get some questions, or people are listening to us, we'll keep doing it.
I think the bigger difficulty with the way we've structured our podcast in terms of committing to doing a podcast every week is the disc review. So if we don't get the time in the field to actually test the disc and feel comfortable about our opinion of it to put it out to everybody that's listening, that's the hardest part. So a lot of times if we don't record in a week or if we skip a week or whatever it is, it's most likely because we didn't have a good feel of any of the discs that we were planning to review and don't want to just make shit up. We don't want to ever
be... Well, we already reviewed all of the discs too, so that makes it hard.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a huge part of it, is making sure we get the field time to evaluate what we're throwing so that we can make sure that we're giving an honest opinion about a disc. And that's extremely important to us. So that there's a huge, that's probably the most difficult part. Joe and I sitting together in the Shedio and talking about disc golf is easy. We don't need much to facilitate that process. But making sure that we're giving an informed opinion about the disc is probably the biggest factor in making sure that a podcast works properly. So I'd say that's it, and that's all the questions we got too. So
hey, thank you all so much.
Joe, you want to do some picks for the Des Moines Challenge? So as we alluded to previously, we will have lead card footage is now Central Coast Disc Golf, because apparently Jomez backed out fairly late, and Ian put together a last minute crew to get that going. So Ian's going to be doing live coverage on Disc Golf Network and producing post-produced coverage. So that is pretty incredible. And
Robin's going to be on standby for tree knowledge.
And you said it's Pickard?
Pickard
Park. So if you want to watch on GK Pro, there's a 2020 Pickard Park. What was the name of the tournament, Joe?
Des Moines Challenge.
Is that it? No, I thought it was something different. All right.
Oh, no. It's Wonderland.
Yeah.
Wonderland.
Wanderlust Open.
Wanderlust.
So if you want to look.
Oh, Wonderland's that's the beer we had with Tyler.
Yeah. So if you want to see the course, check it out. It looks like a bomber course. There's some water in there. It's a park, some low cut grass, and it's not a ball golf course, but it kind of has the feel of it on some of the holes. So.
It's a big bomber course.
So it definitely has some true par fours and par fives. So we are expecting that the players that can really place shots in that 500-foot range are going to be the ones to really score at this course. So, Joe, why don't you start us off? Give us your third place MPO.
Your boy, Kevin Jones.
Oh. All right, I'm taking Calvin Heimberg in third place.
This would be so gross. In second place, I'm taking Calvin Heimberg.
Well, in second place, I am now taking Kevin Jones.
And in first place, I'm taking Paul McBeth.
I am also taking Paul McBeth in first place. Wow, we are the worst.
Why don't you start FPO?
To be fair, like Joe and I did not talk about this
at all.
In third place, I'm taking Katrina Allen.
Okay. Whew. I'm taking Kristen Tatar.
In second place, I'm taking Kristen Starr.
That's all right. In second place, I'm taking Paige Pierce.
Ooh. In first place, I'm taking Paige Pierce.
In first place, I'm taking Katrina Allen.
I went full revenge. I think that this
I know
is,
you did, but I feel like Katrina, in my mind, like I could see that whole tour, and that's how I feel about Paul McBeth. And I could see Paige doing that, but I could also see Paige being like, let's get some quesadillas. And yeah. Katrina being like, I need to run with this. Like, I need to show that it wasn't a mistake.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that, too. I can totally see that. All right, Joe. You ready to do a deer review?
Yes.
All right. It is time for our world-famous deer review, our disc and beer pairing, where we take a disc, we take a beer, we review them both, and let you know whether you should bring on the course. Tonight, we have Numb and Number by Fall River Brewing Company, an 8.2% hazy double IPA, and we're pairing that with the Evader by Dynamic Discs, a 7-speed 4-glide, 0-turn, 2.5-fade fairway driver. Where do you want to start, Joe? Disc or beer?
Let's start with the beer.
All right. So we have reviewed Num Num Juice on this podcast previously, and it is one of our favorite beers, I believe.
If not our favorite.
Fantastic, fantastic beer, hazy IPA. And this just ups the ante on that beer. Just slightly. It's not like a huge increase. What, it was 7.5 for Num Num?
Yeah, 7.5.
But they have the, what's the name of the, I feel so bad. Dumb and Dumber. I know Dumb and Dumber, but like they have a name for the dog van, right? Don't they?
Like, I want to say it's a Shaggin' Wagon, but I don't know if it actually is.
I don't think it is.
It shouldn't be, but
in any case, they're
the dog van.
It's
on the can, but it was never one of those movies that was on like my constant repeat. Like, I know it is for some, but I feel like the Sandler movies hit me harder at that point in my life.
Yeah, I was definitely more of like a Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore.
Yep.
I mean, it's not that I didn't.
No, Dumb and Dumber was great, but I didn't watch it on repeat as many times as I did the Sandler / Farley movies were the ones that I was putting all my world into. Anyway.
I guess I was just saying it's Harry's dog van, but
well,
I guess that's fine. But nonetheless, higher alcohol percentage, great movie pun on the label. This is, without explaining the flavor of the beer in any way, shape, or form,
purely just
an absolute slam dunk.
Yeah, I want to compare it to Num Num. Like if I told you I'd give you Num Num and give you maybe like a tiny bit more booze at the end and get you 0.7% on top, but still get that super like...
Mutt Cuts.
Oh, well, that was his business, not the...
I know, but like that's a Mutt Cuts fan.
But keep that same flavor profile, that super like juice haze, beautiful, refreshing world. I would take it every day. And we bought a case of this because since COVID, and I hope it never goes away. I hope this never goes away. California breweries can ship anywhere in California and there's not an issue. So I was able to order a case of this. There is one in my refrigerator at home, and the one that we are sharing right now, and those are the only ones left.
We should probably order more.
Yeah, I got these 6 days ago. That's not true. Maybe 12 days ago.
So, I mean, obviously it's a hazy IPA, so yep. You're still dealing with the same, like, tropical, juicy flavor that you get from the beer we previously reviewed in Num Num Juice. It's just got a little bit more power to it, and honestly, I cannot tell that there's more booziness to it. It's fantastic.
And as a power bottom, Robin,
I love
just take it.
37 IBUs, 8.2% alcohol. They're saying it's seasonal, which is terrifying.
So two cases.
So just order and like we'll make it work.
So I should just get like one of these and a num num and just we'll just quesadilla guy it for a little bit.
I think that's what it's got to be. I think that's the only answer.
Yeah, it's tropical. It's got an orangey pineapple. Like it's like an orange pineapple. Good, like it's fantastic. We had, I don't even remember what it was called, but we had another one from Fall River. I don't think we actually reviewed it because it just wasn't what we wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
That was more like supposed to be like a super juice IPA that was like similar, or maybe it was even higher ABV than Num Num, and I was super excited about it, and then I drank and I was like, nope, I'll stick with Num Num. Like I'm not that stoked on it. And then I saw this.
Oh, that one was like 10% though. I forget.
Oh,
we
maybe
reviewed it as well.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay. Anyway, they had another one that came out. Not as pumped on it. This is fantastic, though. We're going to buy more. And if you live in California and it's still available, Robin, is it still available?
It is.
If you're in California and it's still available, you should buy
Widowmaker.
Oh, that's what I was talking about.
Oh, okay.
No. Widowmaker's its own world, and that's also totally worth drinking.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were.
No, they had like a season. They had another seasonal, like, juice style IPA, and it just wasn't it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be, but it's a fantastic beer. We're gonna drink a whole bunch more of it, and I'm excited about that. So we're gonna drink more of that. We're gonna drink more Num Num Juice. We should probably talk about the disc because that's part of this thing.
All right, so the Evader by Dynamic Disc, a 7-speed, 4-glide, 0-turn, 2.5 fade. My first instinct on this throw with this disc, first feel was I really like the dome on it. I like the hand feel. Obviously, I prefer lower speed discs, like 7 to 9 speed discs is where I'd like to be. So having that 7-speed rim felt really good. And then the dome, I think is fantastic. I think it's great. The 2.5 fade on this one, I think is real out the box. What I want to see is what happens to this when you beat the crap out of it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think that this disc has glide potential. And that you could get some really awesome lines with it once it gets beat in. And I think it's got a lot of potential there. So basically, you got like a T-Bird, maybe T-Bird 3-ish?
Nope. It's a T. I'm going to tell you right now. This is what it is. And there are people that will rejoice right now. There is a world of people who love themselves a T-Bird, but they like a fresh-ass T-Bird, or they like a beef-out-the-box T-Bird. I know a lot of throwers, Shane's one of them, that love the Jen Allen T-Bird because they like that beefier T-Bird that they can rip hard. It's going to finish, but not super hard. It's going to do what they want. Got a little bit of glide, but it's going to be like, yeah, I'm done now. This is right in line with that. This is for T-Bird throwers that love that fresh T-Bird feel. Like, this is legit a fresh T-Bird out of the box. Well, I guess same world. But I feel like with Lucid Plastic, it's going to kind of beat up a little bit quicker. So with that said, too, if you really like your kind of beat up T-Bird and you get a freshy champ T-Bird from Innova and you're like, this is way more beefy than I ever want it to be, this is also a great place to start because it'll start beating up a little bit faster than your champ T-Bird will. Like, it's a really nice, stable T-Bird. Like, that's every throw I have is like, oh yeah, I used to throw T-Birds. Like, that's what this is, which you can't go wrong with.
Yeah.
I feel like the numbers are pretty spot on.
I think they're almost exactly perfect because you could get a nice little Anheuser on this disc and have it fade out really well. You could put a just pure hyzer on it and give it like a nose down hyzer and let it just glide and work its way from right to left. There's a lot of versatility. The only thing I couldn't do with it is I personally couldn't get it to do just like the pure straight shot. So, but I wouldn't expect that from a disc that says 2.5 fade.
And
so
I don't think
it
I did
always
either.
Had like the straight flight and then finish hard. So yeah, I
finished nicely. It wasn't like a Firebird.
No,
finish.
It wasn't insane.
It was nice,
but
for me, I could get it on like a slight hyzer, get it to like pop up and still finish nicely.
Yeah.
Great. And I didn't. It's lovely. Like it's a. I understand why Oakley loves it, and them dynamic cats are into it. It's a disc in their lineup that they needed, and I think it fits. I think this is maybe what they wanted in my mind, like the River Pro to be, and this is just so much better than that.
I mean, it's so much more overstable than that, and they needed something like that to pair with the Maverick and things like that, that you could have that option in that speed that gives you the, because for most people this disc is going to play very overstable, so you're gonna you're just gonna have it be the version of your Maverick or whatever that doesn't turn at all and gives you good fade at the end, and that's what it is. So for 7-speed arms, that it gives you that overstable top end option, above those Rivers and Mavericks and things like that for your trilogy players. I think that's an important slot.
It totally is.
And it gives you also the option for those kind of flex shots. This will handle a flex shot nicely.
Yeah.
Nicely. It's a fun disc, and it's got some versatility to it. Not a lot of hyzer flip going to happen with it, at least not for me. I
got up to like stand up a little bit. Like I wasn't flipping, turning,
yeah,
none of
that
like, stuff.
It was that headwind that did that, or
very possibly. I'm thinking about how I was throwing, where it was going. That's very possible.
Yeah. So I think these, for once, we're reviewing a disc where the numbers, I think, are pretty dead on.
Which I feel
on.
Like we do that a lot with dynamic discs, to be honest.
If you want a dependable 7-speed disc that'll give you a nice kind of fading finish, I think the Evader is a fantastic option. I'm excited to see how these beat in. I think that there are going to be some straight flyers out of these. Especially, maybe you get like a 167 or like a 165, beat it in a little bit,
yeah,
and you got one that flies straight but still gets you a little fade at the end. I think this could make a nice slot for DD players.
And I'll say we threw it in a little bit of wind, but I feel like I would feel totally confident throwing this in like a decent headwind too.
Oh, for sure. No, I don't. I think I could give it a full rip in a headwind, and it might turn. It might. It will not.
I might give it a little extra.
It will not turn
over. A little extra hyzer.
I think I could throw.
Or just throw it hyzer. I would throw it with a little hyzer. I throw kind of everything.
I don't know. Depending on the wind, straight on headwind, I might. But headwinds are never pure like that straight on. So I would say I trust it in a flat throw in a headwind.
Yeah.
And I think the odds of it actually turning over to a horrible shot are pretty low.
All right, so tell me what you really think. What are you doing with this disc?
I don't have a spot for this disc in my bag. I do like it, but I don't have a spot for it.
What do you throw instead?
Typically, it'd either be the I have a Paul Macbeth Thunderbird, a four-time Paul Macbeth Thunderbird, or three-time?
Three-time,
yeah. That would be the main one. I kind of just kind of choke that down.
Well, that one's way more beefy than this.
It's really overstable.
That's way more beefy than this.
But the other one would be the second run FD. That's pretty much.
I think that's probably closer. I think that's closer.
One of the two.
Just the distance that it goes. You know, I guess we talked about in our questions earlier. It's like, do you just shape your shot different with something that's going to get you the same distance? And I almost feel like I would throw like my, I guess that same way, you know, now I'm thinking about like, yeah, my Cloning Thunderbird, just knowing like it's faster, but it's going to hook up earlier and I might have to put it out more right a little bit more. The other disc that actually was popping into my mind with this, to be totally honest, just because I'm trying to get back to trusting it. And I was kind of expecting you to bring it up. OG Glow FD.
No,
not for wind, just for the same distance. Like,
no,
take a little bit off and push it
for sure. And we can go to a field. I know that I can get more distance out of the OG.
Oh, a billion times yes.
Yeah,
a billion times yes. Totally different shot. But I'm also like, I feel like you'd take some off.
Totally different shot for me. I would not. Yeah. I don't.
I honestly, and actually, Robin and I had this conversation. I don't know if we talked about it in the last podcast, but we had this conversation after not the last round we played, but the round previous. Like, I don't really have an overstable fairway in my bag.
You don't. No.
Like, I don't. And I pulled an eagle off the wall that I was super excited to be that disc and pulled like the least stable eagle that I think we maybe own.
Yeah.
And threw it and just turned over and was like, well, that's not the one. Gosh, now I'm in a conundrum. Do I want to pull another eagle off the wall or do I want to just throw an evader in the bag?
You got two pink evaders. You love pink.
Pink lucid.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, why not?
It is a hole in your bag, technically.
It is.
It's kind of fucked up though that you did an in the bag before this episode and then you're doing this episode. You probably should have known before, but
it's been a hole in my bag for months.
I know, but you're
forever. I never thought about it until you were like, because I've started like,
well, I know, but you're either an asshole or a dingbat. Like,
I think the latter is an easy understanding. I don't think there's any way to listen to this podcast and think I'm actually an asshole. To think I'm a dingbat, that's, if you listen to my rooster rant, my cock talk, of course I'm a dingbat. I'm not saying it's permanently in, but I'm a fucks with it. Because why not?
Yeah, I like it. They're yours. Oh, Joe.
They're both empty. It's fine.
Oh, good.
The beer, like, of course. I'll drink this shit all the time. Like, all
right. So we're 3 out of 4.
This is...
We're both in on the beer.
This is the odds of a, in my mind, a 75% Paige Paul taking down Des Moines.
Okay. I like it.
I could probably ramp totally it up agree. A tiny bit too. Like, just because you like the disc, I can make it like an 83, which is very possible.
I do. It's a super useful disc. Yeah. And it's a
disc. And then he's going to watch me throw it and be like, well, shit, okay. Maybe
it's
I'll.
A No, it's a disc that the Dynamic needed in their lineup.
Yep.
It filled a hole for them. And it's an important kind of. It really is something that they needed to solidify their fairway lineup. So
speaking of in the bag, how could folks find my in the bag?
patreon.com/thediscgolfpodcast. We do a pre-show normally before every single show, and we post that to Patreon. For those of you that want more Disc Golf Podcast, maybe you burn through all our episodes and you're looking for more. There's a ton of pre-shows. All you got to do is join Patreon. Ton of them going back, and we do all kinds of crazy stuff. If you like the main show, you will like our antics on the pre-show. It is free form, all kinds of nonsense. But the last 2 weeks, last week I did a video in the bag that I posted, and this week Joe's will drop on Friday morning to our Patreon as well. So you'll have both kind of video in the bags that'll go up, and then we'll get back on our regular pre-show schedule after that. So patreon.com/thediscgolfpodcast. Check it out. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Throw 5 stars. Leave a nice review. We love seeing it. Drop those 5 stars, please. And in the meantime, get out there this weekend and throw stuff at stuff.
This is a song for the aceless. But those with aces, listen closely. You don't always have to huck it hard. In fact, sometimes that's not right to do. Sometimes you got to lay it up and fucking outrun an ace or two. Sometimes you got to ease if you want to put the D's in the B's. Sometimes you got to say, hey, I'm gonna throw it softly. I'm gonna huck it gently. I'm gonna flick it smoothly. I'm gonna toss it so sweetly. And then you say, hey, I hit some metal. And then you say, wait a minute, Robin, I think I'm starting to get it now. Could you feel my throw for me? That's fucking teamwork. What's your favorite disc? That's cool with me. It's not a trespass, but I guess it works for you. What's your favorite beer? The only answer is an IPA. So let's go to the bar, and then I'm gonna flick it so sweetly. Then I'll fucking hook it softly. And then I'll fucking throw it perfectly. But then I'm gonna hook it.